Go. Hey, folks. Thanks for tuning in once again. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty, and this is going to be another Icons-centric podcast here. In the house, we've got three stellar talents who've been contributing to the Icons product line. First off, we have a repeat performance of Mr. Daniel Gallant. How you doing, Dan?
Hi, how you doing?
Hey, and Dan is the programmer behind the what's the full title on that product, Daniel?
Icons Character Folio.
Nice. And you have an upcoming release we're going to be discussing, right?
Yes. Something coming out fairly soon.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. And I think this is the third time we have the pleasure of having Mr. Jason Chondro on board. How are you doing, Jason?
I'm wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks for being here. And Jason is also known as Dr. Comics, and he is drcomics.blogspot.com, yep, where you can read his erudite, insightful thoughts on all things superhero comic book related. And he is here because Field Guide to Superheroes Volume 2 from Vigilance Press just released today.
Yay!
Or actually, last night at midnight. Yay! It's already number 2.
Yes. Woohoo!
There was much celebration here at the Vigilance Press up prop.
Yeah.
This week, pop some champagne.
A lot of work.
Actually, yeah, this one was a bit of work. But we had a lot of people speaking out about the not able to be searched text of the last volume and the non-bookmarking thing. That was all my fault.
That's Dan Houser talking, folks.
Yeah, I did the layout on the first one and on the second one.
Yep.
But now that I actually have mastered the layout tools, I'm able to insert bookmarks and make easy edits on the fly. So,
well, and I have to say, you know, Dan, since you're already – Houser, since you're already speaking up here, you know, this book I had no idea how far we would take it, the way that it's just come out as a much better product than I had even imagined when we started. And your art has just noticeably gone up. I mean, it's like a whole nother level. And I don't mean to say that I haven't always liked your art, because I did, but this is better art than we had in like the original Icons book, in my opinion.
And my opinion, I would agree. I'm actually pushing I'm trying to stretch the boundaries of Icons, the Icons feel closer to Young Justice and the Justice League cartoon, a little bit further away from the Brave and the Bold initially, only because it's easier to be more anatomically accurate and less stylized, because that stylized form is really hard, because you have to draw everything anyway, and then you have to reduce it down to basic lines. But I'm having a lot of fun drawing stuff too. That was drawing and then laying out and then a second edit. So it was a lot of work.
Dan Houser, I got to gush for 1 second.
Sure.
I was watching the Avengers, the new Avengers animated series, and the one episode that featured that focused on Captain America.
Yeah.
The Bucky character looked exactly like something you would have drawn.
Oh yeah, it, yeah, yeah. I've seen that one.
Like my jaw just it's like, is Dan Houser on the animation team? That's so cool.
No, I wish, but no.
And those bastards at Walt Disney are ripping off Dan. What the hell?
Sue!
I call it an homage.
There you go.
It's homage, my friends.
An homage to Dan Houser.
Well, hey, while we're got four comic book geeks here talking about comic books, Jason was asking before the call started, anybody watch The Cape?
Yeah, I already watched
it.
Blog. Yeah.
So, what'd you guys think?
Well,
I didn't see it,
show.
So I can't comment.
Okay, Jason, you go first.
Well, I enjoyed it a lot. I wrote some comments on my blog about the show a little bit today, in no real order, and just kind of off the top of my head. But if I was trying to tie it into the field guide, I immediately wanted to start archetyping the Cape, right? Like, okay, so he's a Dark Avenger archetype, in which there are many examples in comics. But he also has elements of like the circus hero, because comics have a long tradition of being connected to circus and carnivals. I don't know if have any of you guys read Michael Chabon's book, The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay.
I made a heroic attempt to. I got through about half of it.
You know, most people lose it at like the section where the two guys split apart and one of them goes to Antarctica. But But if you've read that book, and it won the Pulitzer, it's a wonderful novel. It's heavily inspired by Will Eisner and The Spirit and Mr. Miracle and a lot of other – Kirby and Lee and all those guys. But that book's really good about showing you how superheroes are kind of rooted in this circus strongman tradition where people wear these really colorful costumes with capes and tights and then do amazing feats. And something that we don't understand now because we don't all go to the circus, but in 1938, everybody who picked up an issue of Superman number one recognized that as a circus strongman outfit. And we don't really get into that as much anymore. So it was really kind of neat to see the Carnival of Crime show up. And, you know, we still see some of this in characters like Robin, whose origin is tied to the circus. In the very first issue of The Avengers, the Hulk is hiding out in a circus, you know, where he's accepted and no one has any problem with his freakish appearance.
And that might have a lot to do with a lot of those people being hooked on heroin and methamphetamines. Like a giant gray guy hanging out with us. Most of them probably didn't realize that was actually there.
maybe you're right. But if we're going to try and get into Stan Lee and Jack Kirby's uses of drugs, I don't think But that was really cool. I also really liked all the Shadow homages in the character because the character is very much based on the Shadow. The Shadow was originally written by Walter Gibson, who was a practicing stage magician. And although nowadays we connect the Shadow up with things like psychic powers and invisibility, in the original stories he didn't have any of that. His invisibility was just stage magic, and his ability to cloud men's minds was just hypnotism. And that's very much what we see in the cape. So that was all cool, and I thought that the plotting was very fast. They buzzed through a lot of it very rapidly, which probably took a lot of TV watchers by surprise, but which those of us who are comic readers, we could totally go with. I mean, we're used to having an entire origin issue told in 22 pages. And I like the way that they're introducing new villains all the time. I think that's also straight out of the Stan and Jack playbook. You know, it's 1963 all over again. Every issue, you introduce another wacky villain until you've got so many, you could never use them all. And then you just sort of see which ones get popular. You know, some villain will pop up, the fans will like him, he'll get a fan following, and then that's the character that comes back for a return. So, you know, overall, I thought it was pretty good. I enjoyed the hell out of it. I thought it was a lot better than, like, No Ordinary Family. It's better than any episode of Smallville you'd care to mention. And I may have even liked it better than I liked Heroes, which was saying a lot because I love that show.
Wow, pretty cool. That's pretty well thought out there. Gallant or Hauser, you guys have any thoughts?
I don't watch regular television. I'll probably be a week behind on this show until it's like posted to NBC.com, but I will watch it. I haven't seen it yet.
It's already posted, Hauser, and you need to go out and watch it.
Then I will. I mean, that's a high recommendation. However, from what I've heard, all my friends have said the show is really good. You should check it out. And I'm a huge fan of anything superhero being on television. Yeah. I always support it with 100% of my verve. Also, we mentioned on the last podcast, but the last podcast kind of got eaten by the Bermuda Triangle about how there's a guy in Seattle.
Yes. Phoenix Jones.
Phoenix Jones, man. He's actually fighting crime.
Yep.
And dressing like a superhero.
He was on the Huffington Post and stuff. He's on major news now.
Yeah, the guy's for real. I mean, yeah, he gets driven around by somebody, but again, I mean, Batman has Alfred. This guy has a partner that drives him around and gets him to the crime scenes, and he takes care of business. I mean, if I knew that there was a dude that was dressed like a weirdo waiting for someone to commit some kind of misdemeanor just so that he could hammer him with his mixed martial arts skills, makes me both happy and terrified at the same time.
He totes around a billy club taser.
Yeah, dude. What's up? He's a superhero.
This is actually part – Phoenix Jones is part of the real-life superhero movement, which has been going on for over a decade. There's a documentary on the real-life superhero movement, and Rolling Stone did a big article on them.
We're not talking about those guys on Sunset who dress up like the Hulk and X-Men stand in front of the Man's Chinese Theater.
These are people who dress up in costumes to fight crime. And what it really is, it kind of turns into a lot of sort of neighborhood watch activity, where they kind of watch the streets, and if they see anything suspicious, they call the cops. But like, there's a guy in Arizona called the Green Scorpion. There's a whole list of them. If you Google for real life superheroes, you'll see. find them.
That's what came up for me when I finally did the Google.
What's amusing to me is there's actually a website, a company devoted to making costumes.
Yes.
For them. That's actually kind of cool.
Yeah.
I know that I wouldn't look good in spandex, but maybe some power armor or something. Yeah, that would work.
There's apparently a pushback against Phoenix Jones in the real life superhero movement because they are accusing him of staging the whole news story that got him noticed.
Did you see his costume, man? The guy cares.
Yeah.
He cares about how he looks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He's
like the Booster Gold of real life superheroes.
Yeah.
Huh. You know, back when I was doing stand up comedy, there's a lady I was doing stand up with. Part of her act was derived from true life. She came home from waitressing one day and found her boyfriend putting on body armor and a cowl. And that's an awkward conversation, isn't it? And he explained that just like Batman, he becomes one with the night and patrols the streets to keep him safe. And I was like, so what happened? And she's like, well, now he's one of the X-Men.
Nice.
Yeah. Ba-dum-bump. So, hey, so Gallant, have you seen this show?
No, I have not. I really, really want to see it. It does sound very good. And you're right about the other recent superhero show about the superpowered family. I watched a few episodes of it and it just didn't grab me. But
yeah. Well, Mike.
Oh, hey,
Mike. You.
So while we're talking about real life superheroes, sure. I need to mention something. Somebody I think you should meet sometime, Jason. Yeah. Old writing teacher of mine, Troy Hickman.
Yeah.
He won the pilot season with Top Cow.
Oh, great. Congratulations. That's great news for him.
And his comic book is coming out this Wednesday, as in January the 12th. It's called Twilight Guardian.
Okay.
And it's about a girl in a small town who dresses up as a vigilante and goes out and guards her neighborhood. And it's kind of a combination of real-life drama and humor with a little bit of you get a lot of the comic books that she reads in there, so there's superhero action as well and what inspires her. But it's Troy does incredible dialogue and really fleshed-out characters. If you saw he did another book for I should know this off the top. He did another book a few years back for Top Cow. It was about a donut shop.
Yeah.
Do you remember the name of that one?
I remember the story. It was, I think he originally did it as a web comic, didn't he?
Common Grounds.
That's right.
Now, he was doing it as a small press release at conventions
that
and stuff,
was it,
and it was
yes.
It was picked up by Top Cow. He had some of the best artists in the industry drawing it, and same kind of thing, you know, sort of a juxtaposition of real life and superheroics. But Troy's a great writer. It's going to be one of the best books that comes out this year, I predict, because it's January, and I think you should pick it up in 2 days at your friendly neighborhood comic shop.
I have one of his issues of Common Grounds. When he was doing it independent. It's the issue where, like, the guys are talking to each other in the men's room.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. There's Mental Midget the hero.
Yep.
And, it was another mental themed. Yeah, the whole thing happens while they're it's from one stall to another.
Yes.
They wind up having a conversation. So, Troy's hilarious. He's a great writer. The book Twilight Guardian from Top Cow comes out in 2 days. So check it out. And I'm going to have an interview from Troy. Going up on the same day, on the 12th. So,
right.
Twilight Guardian, check it out.
I will look for it.
So, but hey, moving right along, Jason, let's talk about Field Guide number 2.
You bet. Okay. Where should we start?
But basically, let's talk about how this is. Let's just kind of give the elevator pitch for this book.
So, I've given like the brief history of the Field Guide in a previous podcast, so I won't bore everybody again. But the Field Guide is an attempt to categorize the basic archetypes of the superhero. And it's different than other books that have done this. I'm not the first person to do archetypes, but it's done in a different way. Most superhero books categorize the superhero by his combat role. He's the brick, or he's the mentalist, or he's the speedster. They use powers and your stats on the page as the primary way of telling one kind of superhero from another. My approach is more story-based. So I'm more interested, for example, in character types like the alien or the android or the super cop or the ex-con superhero. Now, any of these categories, and you could pick any one, you know, let's say the android. Okay, well, we can think of a lot of android heroes, right? Characters like Machine Man or the Metal Men. But characters like Vision is an android, or Red Tornado is an android. Hell, the original Human Torch was an android back in 1939. Well, what powers do these characters have in common? Not much. I mean, the Human Torch is a fire guy and Red Tornado is a wind guy. But the stories that they tell are the same. And when I say stories, what I'm mostly talking about in the case of the android hero are stories like the Pinocchio story. These are robots who just want to be a real boy. And they have the same sort of stories that Data had, for example, from Next Generation, if you're Star Trek fans. And the way that the role that they have in a group, like they're the character that looks at something and says, well, that seems wrong. Well, all the other human beings have just ignored it because they're used to accepting these moral wrongs. It's the android that steps out and acknowledges that thing as being strange or unusual. And he sort of serves as a kind of conscience sometimes for the group because he is himself questing to be more human. So he helps us as humans come to understand what that means. Well, so the archetypes, and I stopped at 40 because you had to stop somewhere, but I could have kept going to an almost infinite number.
Don't do that. Speaking as the artist and layout guy.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Well, good with those. 10 each. 10 each is good.
At some point, Hauser gets tired of drawing characters. So
yeah, oh, yes.
So
because 10 in each book is actually 20 because I draw an example character too.
That's right. And I'm actually yeah, it is. It's 20 in each book, and I'll actually squeeze in an extra one in volume 3 because one of the archetypes is actually two people. So I shamelessly abuse my artist, and but I'm very, very fortunate to have him. And I will lavish praise on him.
Oh,
anybody
thank you.
Anybody who's tried to write comics, and I have, understands that it's a collaborative art form. And nothing breeds respect for an artist like trying to work on a comic without one. You know, you can't do it. I don't draw. I'm a writer. And my stumbling forays into published comics work will attest, I'm heavily dependent on my artist. So I'm very, very grateful to have Dan on this project. Anyway, so it's 40 archetypes broken up into 4 books of 10 archetypes each. And every archetype has got a discussion of kind of qualities and challenges, and then abilities, powers, specialties, and stunts. And then there's a sample character that fits that archetype, complete with stats and a full description and background. And all these characters are designed so that you could play them as NPCs, but they also make NPCs with plot hooks. So they all have stories built into them that draw in the player characters and make the player characters go off on some sort of adventure.
Okay. Now, volume 1, I guess, went A through C in the alphabet, and this one's going from D through J, Descendant through Jungle Hero.
Superhero archetypes are loaded on certain letters. There's a lot of S's, for example. So it's not moving at any kind of, it's not moving methodically through the alphabet so much as methodically through the list. So, yeah.
Okay, cool, cool. Do you have a favorite hero in this book?
Oh, that's a good question. Cause I like a lot of them. Let me think. My favorite hero from the first volume was probably the Veil. Because I think that there's a lot of room for more Muslim characters in superhero comics. From this volume, oh gosh, you know what? It might be the Rhodes Scholar, who is my shameless Speed Racer homage. The Rhodes Scholar is Speed Racer 40 years older. So he's now like the car mechanic to the superheroes. He's the guy that builds the supermobile, the superjet, the super submarine. And when I was writing him up, not only did I get a chance to write up the Mach 5 and Icons, which I thought was a lot of fun, but I also got to introduce the whole idea of this unlimited racing league into the superhero world with a whole bunch of super racing teams like the Zen team and the Power team, which I stole shamelessly from Rollerball. And and the bod with the rod, Chase Manhattan, who is the Rhodes Scholar's now rival and potential love interest. So
now you had to invent a new power for Icons for this character.
Yeah,
right?
We did. We had to figure out how do vehicles get written up? I mean, if your character wants one. Now, you could have just, you know, for a lot of characters, like if I was making up, you know, a Batman type in Icons, I wouldn't necessarily give him a Batmobile. I'd just give him a tag. I'd give him a quality Batmobile or something. And that would probably be all you'd need. But for a character like a Rhodes Scholar, it's defined by his vehicle. I mean, his only power is his super vehicle. So it had to be more than a tag. And so then we came up with some rules for a super vehicle, which are in the book. Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice. Okay, cool. Yeah, I've had a chance to look at the draft before it went to press, and it's really an awesome book. And yeah, you're right. Dan is really stepping up the,
great.
Yeah. And, hey, Daniel Gallant, could we get that maybe in the next edition of the Folio, that new power?
I was certainly hoping if I could give me the details and then I can put that in. No problem.
Yeah, there's another couple of bonus powers and stuff in the first volume. Do you have those, or do you want those?
I do not have them, but and you know what? I do want them.
Okay. But I'll send you all this. I'll get a package together.
Right, okay, yeah, we can definitely hook you up with that, Gallant.
Okay.
And hey, while we're talking about the Folio, did we already cover your upcoming release about that?
Yes, well, we did in the last podcast, so again, I won't bore people, but... I do have, since, you know, I'm bored and I like to add little odds and sods every now and then, the latest little addition I've made to the character folio is a villain button, where you press the villain button and a little window comes up and it tells you what kind of villain it is, his personality, and, you know, how he gets things done, his demeanor.
Is that using the Villainomicon random villain generator table, or
actually, that's not. That's using something called the villain machine.
Very cool.
By Michael Berkey. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly.
You know, there is going to be an element in Villainomicon for that. We actually went through that on one of the podcasts about how at the table you'll create your own villains as well. So that's awesome. That's really cool.
So that's going to once I get the Villainomicon, I can definitely expand that villain button. To be more of a to be more.
Yeah.
You know it'd be a great tool add on for the portfolio, and maybe I'm wrong here, but if you had a 2d6 die roller, I could just use like in play.
Oh, that's an awesome idea.
That would be kinda handy.
Oh yeah, you have your character sheet on the screen and you could just click the die roller while you play. Yeah, that would be great.
Oh.
Yeah, because I actually had to hunt around in my junk drawer earlier and find 2d6 because we're gonna do a little actual play session here later. And so yeah, just a thought, man. But, hey, while we're talking about the Villainomicon, Mr. Hauser, I understand you have some news hot off the presses from Adamant Entertainment.
Actually, yeah, and looks like Gareth actually posted it also to the Icons Yahoo group about when the Villainomicon is releasing. It should be a week from today. It goes off to print, and so PDFs will be sent out at that time. It was just Gareth, again, had to make sure that everything was approved and ready to go all at the same time. So for folks who have been waiting patiently for the Villainomicon, I promise you won't be disappointed. The book is going to be awesome. And I've also finished all the primary and cover art for the next module that's coming out. So there's that portion of the hot scoop. The other thing is Gareth and I are actually now talking about that sponsorship project. We're kind of a collective one setting for the Iconics universe, not necessarily the whole universe, and we're still looking at what we want the boundaries of that to be. So if it's going to be one big city or one America with a bunch of different cities, we're working on that now. But he did mention that as well in the thread. Now it's Steve, Gareth, and I talking about that and just going over some ideas. I'm glad that I'm really, really honored they involved me in that discussion. And I'm now just blown away by the amount of thought that's gone into it. I know Mike and I have actually behind the scenes talked about that a few times, about how creating a sort of pseudo MMO/persistent world for everyone to jump into. So if you have like a company that like Vigilance that says, okay, well, we want to take the World War II portion of this shared world and say that that's going to be our domain. So anything that happened in World War II happened the way that we say it happened. Or if, Steve Trustrom's company, Misfit, comes in and says, okay, well, we want all of the future stuff, that's happening off in the 31st century. Or, the Ion Guard folks, Bash, if they say they want to do all of the galactic slash cosmic stuff. Again, that's still all in the talks phase. And, Gareth wanted us to, do kind of a straw poll, folks who are hearing the podcast to write in, to Gareth or myself, or just swing by the Adamant, homepage. We'll have a link there for this podcast. You can drop in a reply or even on the Podbean page for this podcast, and just drop off some comments saying, yeah, you'd like to see that or what you'd like. A lot of the folks in the Yahoo group have also talked about how, they wouldn't want to see something that was simply just the same thing that you've seen in other books. And I agree. That's why I would want there to be more participation in from different avenues, creating one cohesive world. My idea was more like the old, Forgotten Realms and Greyhawk Gazetteer, where you'd actually get a monthly update as to what's going on. You'd have like a few official games going on around the country and kind of evolve the setting as we go along. So it kind of becomes more like a comic book enterprise than a just a role playing game.
Did you have you guys ever played Traveler?
Oh yeah.
You remember the Traveler's Aid journal?
A few times. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I think Steve mentioned that in our discussions.
Yeah, where like every month or so you'd get some sort of little story bit that would move the overall plot line of the setting forward a little bit.
Is this still considered like the largest sort of shared gaming world? Like as far as story goes? Like there's nothing that even comes close to it?
Yeah.
Like if you take everything from the beginning right to the present?
Sounds like a great project, Dan. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's something that Gareth and Steve have been talking about, and that's because everyone asks a lot of questions regarding the Iconic. Steve kind of said up front that the goal of Icons isn't to be a continuity machine for campaign games. It's designed to be something that you can that when you're playing it, you can sit down and start playing. This project, we want to keep it as simple as possible. So it would literally be like a company would take a section of the city and say, okay, here's the slums, here's a 3-page description of the slums, and we will do other things involving that if you want it, but here's what it is. And this is the part that we take care of. So questions can be answered about that. And because, I mean, constantly I'm getting questions about characters in the book that I designed for the cover, and what their powers and their backgrounds are and other things like that. So a lot of them have backgrounds. Everything that I drew had at least a one sentence, origin, but things that were going to be fleshed out by Steve, I handed off to Steve, and that may be happening in a module or it may happen in this project. But again, if you have a comment on this and you'd really like to get involved, definitely jump onto the Yahoo Groups page, or reply in the podcast reply thread, or you can get a hold of me at drh@adamantentertainment.com. And Gareth's is, I believe, adamantentertainment@adamantentertainment.com, or it's gareth@adamantentertainment.com. I'm not sure, but you can definitely get his email address from the adamantentertainment.com website.
Okay, so if you want this project, folks, make sure you go to the Adamant Entertainment website and make your voice heard, or leave a comment on our website. But express yourself if this is something you want to see.
Absolutely.
And I should probably make a note that Ion Guard was produced by Radioactive Ape Designs.
Radioactive Ape, I'm sorry. Yeah, guys, I apologize. I really love the first and the second book. The art direction is really cool on those, and everything that Colin stuff. I apologize, guys. I've just been hellbent for leather trying to get a bunch of different projects out pretty much simultaneously, so I apologize for my
Is it Ion Guard? Is that an Icons book? I don't know it.
Ion Guard.
Oh, yeah. It was,
and Bash.
Hey, I'm sorry.
It's for Ion Guard and Bash, actually. It's really good. It's a cosmic
thing. It's It's an awesome book. We try to get Colin on. We should try again in the future. It's a Green Lantern slash Nova Corps kind of a book. The Ion Guard, that's what they are. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just great art, well written book. It's on RPG Now. You should really check it out.
Yes. Colin Chapman is the fellow who runs Radioactive Ape Designs. In fact, he's a reason why in Icons, if you pre-order Icons and got all the little standees, one of them is an ape that is radioactive. So I saw that. I was like, well, I have to throw a radioactive ape in there for the guy. You know, he's going to need one.
And a very nice British fellow, so I'm sure he'll still forgive
very,
you, Dan.
Very cordial, very nice, and he's a great patron. Mm-hmm. He's bought a couple designs for me in the past.
I understand he is a great Sudoku player too.
Yeah, I guess. I saw The Simpsons and it was Sony has picked up a Sudoku book and it said it's pretty much all luck is what it says on the front.
I just made that up. Oh. I was gonna say they had a great singing voice, but I said that about Noble Knight so many times. It's kind of losing its value.
Yeah, you can get all kinds of things at Noble Knight. We all know this. NobleKnight.com is your online friendly local gaming store.
Yeah, they are great fellows, even if they don't have great singing voices. But yeah, anything out of print you might be looking for, say the original wooden box edition of D&D,
yep,
they got it.
The white box.
They are
is
the
out
game
there.
Providers to the gods.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. I mean, seriously, I literally was looking for we're talking about the James Bond podcast on our Lost podcast. We're talking about the James Bond RPG. They have that there. Top Secret SI, they have it. If you want to, if you really, really want to have third edition Shadowrun, you're really like, you're totally into third or first edition Shadowrun, give them a look. They will likely have the books you're looking for.
What I liked about Top Secret was the venereal disease table.
Yes.
That was a lot of fun.
That is great. That is.
You know, I managed to forget that until now. Thank you.
We were talking about Traveler. I like how at Traveler you could die during character generation.
Oh, yes.
That was awesome.
My life path has brought me to the end of my life path. Have fun, guys.
You mean terrible.
That's I love old school game design sometimes, and sometimes I hate it.
You know,
the fury of
we had a lot to learn. I mean, game design was a curve, you know, and
yeah,
we had to make a lot of experiments, a lot of pushing off into unexplored avenues, and sometimes those avenues turned up dead ends.
But without the granularity of Traveler, you wouldn't have gotten that kind of response that some people had, that gut response to go, you know what, I want something completely not granular. And that's kind of where Storyteller came from and the five-star like characteristic ranks. You know, it's like, okay, it's going to be even easier than that. You just have to describe your character with these very basic points. And I think that's how the gaming sector, I guess, of entertainment is growing. I know that people are saying the role-playing game market is dying, and I agree the old way of doing things is like changing. It's molting into something different, definitely. I mean, but I do see the hobby staying around in some form or fashion, you know?
Well, all I know is that I run a tabletop game every week for the last two and a half
same
years.
Here. I started a Pathfinder game that includes folks who just turned 18 and 19.
Yep.
So, and when they were shown actually Noble Knight, I brought them into the store. You now have gamers for life who found out that there are games for literally anything that they like. Leverage, Smallville. So, yeah. I think that there's a way to get everyone back into gaming.
I really think Icons is a good way to do that because it's, as we're about to demonstrate, you can really just pick up and go. I mean, we're going to roll characters here in a second and jump into a World War II themed adventure that Mr. Gallant's been nice enough to think up for us. And, it's as easy as just picking up a controller and playing a PS3 game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, close to it anyway.
Well, now that you mentioned that interactive character sheet, I think that's such a great idea. I'm going to make it as quickly as I can. And
sweet.
It'll be it'll be a free add-on to the character.
Yeah, let me also hype Evil Dan's stuff here. TechOgre has put in a lot of work, and each iteration that comes out from the very first of the character folio has been better than the last. And you get that update for free. You're not getting charged over and over and over and over again for this folio, which, believe me, it's definitely worth both bucks you'd pay for it. In the amount of flexibility the thing has now from where it began, it's awesome.
And this is the first product I ever made for public consumption. My usual work is all behind the scenes, so this has been a really fun project for me. It's been good for it's something I've really enjoyed doing, and I'm still enjoying to do. Frustrated at times, but still fun.
Yes, that. I've never laid anything out, and doing layout for the first time made me really appreciate why artists and layout people need to work together more.
Dan, Hauser, can I ask you a question?
Yes, absolutely.
You've been really busy, I know, over the Christmas and Thanksgiving break. Has any of that opened up a little bit? Because I confess I'm getting ready to drop the manuscript for Field Guide 3 on you, and I'm worried that you're going to fire it right back at me and say, take a number.
Well, no. I have contractually three things on the table right now that take precedence. One, of course, is icons. Anything module related for icons kicks everything else off the table. I mean, I have a contract with Gareth for that. Number two is with Chuck. Chuck has contracted me to do Usher's interior layout and do some art for it as well. So those both carry the same priority. The third thing, of course, is going to be the folio, because I kind of took that on as kind of a pet project of my own. So those are the three main things right now. There's also the Hero Pack and the Wave 2. This is something that I started a while back. Gareth asked me, due to licensing issues, to not use the card setup for the characters in the book. So I've had to relay out every character's page. So that went from being two cards per page to one character per page. So in the first wave, there was 75 people, and then the second wave, there was around 100 almost. So I've got a 100-page book I have laid out. So, folks, I understand that you've been waiting a long time for that. It's definitely there. It will. I just do it in the times that I have when I'm not juggling giant hot potatoes. So, yeah, I'm always busy, but that's what being a professional artist is going to be. So if it fills up 8 hours my day and I get paid enough to pay my bills, then I'm being a professional artist, so that's not a problem for me. So yeah, feel free to drop the manuscript on me once you had it looked at, proofread and everything. So I'm ready for it. And that also goes for for other projects that I have with James as well.
So Dan's hella busy is what we've learned here.
Yep. Yeah, always. Is. But happy to be busy.
Well, you know,
all right.
Oh, I have to brag a little bit since Dan Hauser's life sounds so awesome. I have to compete. So I'm teaching a class on comic books and graphic novels right now at University of California, Riverside. And it's awesome because I get, you know, to go in, I have a class full of 60 people and we talk about comic books all week long and I get paid and it's awesome.
That's nice.
I just had to, that's it. I'm done.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, folks, thanks for tuning in once again. And Daniel, and Jason, appreciate you guys being here with me.
I'm always happy to be here.
And you guys remember how we close the podcast, right?
Of course.
Right.
All right. What? So until next time.
Stay vigilant.
Stay vigilant.
There we go. All right. Thanks a lot, folks. Have a good week.
Yeah, Mike, you too, man.